The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
All right, Joe, it's time to do the show we actually like.
Yeah, all right. We suffered through that other bullshit.
It's time for the answer of the week. Here's how it works. My name's Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast. Across from me is the other host, Joe Patrick.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag, indeed. Every week, Joey posts the question of the week on the THN forums. We announce it on the show for that week, and then you can go and answer it at the forums, or you can call us at 402-819-4894 with your two-minute answer. Just be sure and say, hey, call about the question of the week so we know what's going on. Or you can send us an MP3 to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Again, 2 minutes and 2 minutes only. Before we get into this, we're unveiling this week's cocktail of the week.
Hey.
The Golden Lasso of Truth, brought to us by none other than Casey Baum. She found this one, went out and sourced it this morning. Here's what we're drinking. It is 1.5 parts white rum, 1/2 part brandy, 1/2 part triple sec, and 1/2 part lemon, served in a very cute martini glass.
Yeah, it's with fancy.
Sexy lemon garnish.
Chin.
Ooh. That's not bad at all.
Ooh, it burns going down.
It's a little boozier than I thought. We'll have the recipe for the cocktail of the week up on the notes for the show that none of you guys ever read, but it'll be there.
Also, Matt doesn't read because he realized that I've never once put the recipe in the notes.
Okay, you need to do that.
Okay, well.
All right.
Yeah.
So they can drink along with us.
No promises.
Let's get to it. Joe Patrick, what are we asking the nerds this week?
This week's question came from our very own British delinquent who wanted to know our favorite cult comics.
I love it.
Not like, don't be calling up with your Supermans and your X-Mens.
No, it's a little late for that now, but we are going to cut you off. You call up and you go, ah,
we're not going to cut you off. We're going to let you make your case.
No, nope, I'm going to flush it down the toilet.
This is your show.
When you're like, oh man, I love a little cult hit. You may not have heard of it. It's called Saga. Nope, not a cult book. Nope, sorry. Let's go right to it. Aaron Myers, who Google Voice thinks is Sarah Myers.
Yeah, Chicken Leslie.
Hits us on the Google Voice.
Wait, this doesn't say chicken, it says chicken.
Hey guys, it's Aaron Myers, THN Love Slave, calling in with my answer about cult comics, cult following underappreciated. So I had a couple of answers that first came to mind, but after thinking about it for a few minutes, I'm actually going to go with a book that's still going and has been going just about 20 years now. And it's the one book I've read and own every issue of and have subscribed to and had delivered to me in the mail over the years, even when I wasn't reading comics. And it's because it's a comic, not really about comic books. It's about role playing and a group of role players who, have their adventures around the dinner table. It's called Knights of the Dinner Table. And it's a book I started reading in the mid-90s, and I've been reading up until today. And it's definitely got its core following, and it keeps it going, and it's supported by that following, but it's not necessarily a mainstream comic at all. It's really a comic book for the role-playing community. And, I mean, I love it because it kind of keeps me tied to my role-playing roots from grade school and junior high and high school, even though I don't have time for it these days. But that's my answer, and I hope you like it.
Totally Bye. Counts. Yeah, as long as I can remember, looking at the Diamond Order forms, I remember seeing that book. Knights of the Dinner Table. I have never read
no
a single issue.
Me neither.
All right.
I think it's got a very specific audience.
I think so, too.
The definition of a cult favorite.
There you go. D. Murray hits us, as he does every week, and he says, I know it's early, but this question got me so excited, which is odd. He never really gets excited when he calls in.
How's it going, guys? D here answering your question in a week. I know you guys just posted this, but this question hit me in my feel goods, and I just had to talk about it.
Whoa.
My answer for favorite cult hit comic book has to be Gen 13. And I know Randy Andrews is going to be pissed because he probably has his very same answer, but
he doesn't.
It was so big in the 90s that they actually made a cartoon show for Gen 13. It wasn't like broadcasted out on TV channels and like on DVD, but it was an actual cartoon out. You can probably look for it on torrents or online or wherever, but everyone who was everyone knew about Gen 13. They knew about grunge. They knew about Fairchild. They knew about Roxy. They knew about the, like, all the Gen 13 dudes. Like, even Marvel did a mix-up, a Gen 13 and Generation X crossover comic book. And Gen 13 was big, but it was only big around, like, a certain audience. It wasn't big around everyone. Everyone didn't know what Gen 13 was, but there were those cult followers who just loved Gen 13, much like Mr. Randy Andrews. That was the awesome comic book to me in the 90s, and that's my answer, Gen 13. If you haven't read it, check it out. It's just, it's full-on fun. Take it easy, guys.
Does that count? What do you think? Does that count, Gen 13?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm counting it.
I think it counts, because Gen 13, it's not like it was a household name.
No, definitely.
I think it did have... I think it was very popular for a while.
It was, definitely.
But, yeah, no, I mean, I'm going to give it to you. Gen 13 is, because nowadays, I bet if you ask 10 modern comic book readers...
Oh, they'd have no idea.
The majority of them are not going to know what Gen 13 is.
I'll tell you what, Joe and I don't make any money doing this, but it's times like these when we're able to bring together two Gen 13 readers, like Dee Murray and Randy Andrews. My heart just swells in my chest.
It makes it all worth it.
I mean, really. Right now, we need to go to Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn.
Sup, nerds. Anthony, currently from Brooklyn here with my favorite cult comic, which I think is a cult comic. I mean, it is a well-established property, but this particular volume is very highly regarded by a very small group of people. One of them is Dan Abnett, so that puts me in great company, and that is, for me, the Legion of Superheroes 5 years later. This volume is written by Keith Giffen and Tom and Mary Beerbohm, largely drawn by Keith Giffen, and I love this series so much, and I'm a huge Legion fan. It took everything about the Legion, costumes, code names, utopian future, kicked it in the balls, and laughed in its face. Now, if you're somebody who finds the Legion impenetrable, which personally I don't understand, teenage superheroes in the 30th century, their powers are in their names. Shrinking Violet shrinks, Brainiac 5 is smart, Bouncing Boy bounces. It's pretty simple.
Saturn Girl, Saturn!
This destroyed all of that. And that's why I love it. And it took more risks than any series ever, before or since, I would argue. It did things like a took a well-established female character and said, well, she's transgender. One of their classic villains turns out to be one of their founders. It was nuts, and I'm not even scraping the surface of how crazy this is. But what made me love this series is that it took cookie cutter characters that I love and made them real people. And let's face it, the Legion of Superheroes never had a ton of stakes going on because their world, their universe, was perfect. Take that away, and everything the Legion had to fight for, they had to fight like dogs to get. So any ounce of light in this series was earned, and it was awesome, and I love it. So that is my answer. Thank you.
Was the transgendered character girl boy, or was it boy girl? I don't remember.
Such a disappointment.
I know.
You're a tremendous disappointment.
I don't give a shit about the Legion, okay?
He's right, though. That run of the Legion is groundbreaking for its time.
When was that?
It was the very late 80s into the early 90s.
Called Legion 5 years later.
It was just the Legion of Superheroes. But in between the previous volume and the start of this new one, there was a 5-year jump in the timeline. The happy-go-lucky, like, spandex wearing, that Legion was gone.
Right.
It was very darkly political. It dealt with a ton of social issues.
Was this running at the same time as L period E period I period?
Yeah, but those Legion? Two books have nothing to do.
Yeah,
with
they were separate. Though. Yeah. They were, but okay. But this kind of introduced like the science police and stuff. And
well, no, the science police was from Silver Age.
Oh, okay.
It's just what they called the police.
Okay, I'm not a Legion guy.
You get it? It's the police, but in the future. They're the science police.
And calling it the future police would be dumb because that'd be
to
like
them, it's the present.
Us calling the police, the now police.
Right.
Somebody exactly. Call the present police!
Yeah. That's a great answer, Anthony. I do love the Legion.
I know you do. I'm going to count it. That's a cult run. I'm fine with that. If you want to say, look, there's an X-Men run that not many people remember or know about or whatever, or a story that you know, it's a cult favorite. I'm fine with that. That counts.
We'll see.
Good job, man.
We'll see.
Let's go back to the Google Voice line. Hey, it's our buddy Jeff Hitt. We haven't heard from him for a couple weeks.
It's because you cut him off.
Oh, please. I have to cut him off at the coffee shop too. I'm like, Jeff, I have to go, dude. I'm late for work.
Hi, Joe and Matt. Jeff Hitt. Sorry, it's been a while since I called in, but the Colts' favorite question got my mind working. So I grew up a comic book fan. I was a huge Marvel Comics kid, never much into DC. But a little thing called Zero Hour got me interested because it was a start over. And at that time, I was working with a guy who was a huge DC Comics fan and knew that I liked Marvel. So he put in my hand a little thing called Starman Number Zero. And just kind of changed my whole view of DC Comics, became wildly obsessed with it, and went out of my way to try to hunt everything down, get issues. And along the way, I somehow missed Starman Number 11. Could not find it anywhere. Would go to every comic shop whenever I would go out of town, going through back issue bins trying to find it. As a matter of fact, when I got married in 2000, my wife and I, the wonderful Kathy Hitt, went on our honeymoon and ended up in a comic shop on our honeymoon looking through back issue bins trying to find Starman Number 11. Yes, I remember which issue
Talk
it was.
Talk about romance.
must finally, have been the 5 years after I got married, I was in town visiting Chicago from after I moved to Omaha, and was hanging out at the comic book shop that I used to go to, talking to the Jimmy who worked at that shop. And as I was talking, well, somebody I had known from my time there heard us talking about Starman Number 11, because I was, of course, looking for it. He says, you know what? I think that's an issue I have two copies of. So he went home, went through his long boxes, found issue number 11, called Jimmy, dropped it off of the shop, and I went back into that local comic shop before I left to go back to Omaha and got my Starman Number 11. So that's how I got my complete run of Starman comics, was the kindness of another Starman fan. And that's how Starman fans are. We're awesome. All right, there you go, guys. That should be 2 minutes. Talk to you soon.
Starman, of course.
Huge cold hit.
Everyone knows how I feel about Starman.
Huge cold hit.
Everyone.
We don't need to go into it. It's ridiculous.
I really appreciate that call.
We gush about it too much.
And that is a really great story about finally completing, like, the satisfaction of completing a complete run.
Yeah.
The finding the final piece of the puzzle.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh,
I love
yeah.
it. I love it.
Go back to Google Voice Line for a ghost from Joe Patrick and I's past.
We think. I don't know. Did you listen
we think,
to it?
We think. Maybe.
Hey, this is Chris Wengert, Blast from the Past, circa 2006.
Totally him!
Calling an answer to the question of the week. The question was, what was the best cult hit comic book or something like that? There's only one answer for me, and it's The Runaways by Brian K. Vaughan. I think this is one of the greatest comic series ever written. And although it tried to blow up and they tried to put all the characters in various different spots and try to use them, try to get a TV show, all of that, in the end, the first mini series, quote unquote, is definitely a cult hit. It used new, brand new characters, obscure characters, amazing art by Adrian Alfano. I love that series. Thanks, guys. Nice listening to your podcast. Bye.
Chris worked with Joe Patrick and I at a comic book store years ago. He's a sweet kid. He joined the Navy or something like that, right?
No, he moved on to bigger and better things. I don't think he joined the Navy.
Okay.
But I think he went off to college and he got married. And
yeah, he's a real man.
He's a grown-up now.
He's a big boy.
Yeah.
Oh, we knew
he's had sex with a lady.
Okay. I think the last of truth is starting to get to Joe.
I only had one sip of it.
Chris, so good to hear from you. Hey, I'm going to give...
Welcome aboard.
I'm giving Runaways cult status because when it came out, it did not sell very well. People didn't know what it was going to be, and it caught on.
You don't know that.
It was not
huge. You
do
not have that data.
I know it wasn't huge. I know it was not huge, and it caught on through sheer force of will of people that loved it. I mean, Runaways was like, at the same time, it was right after, what was it, like, wasn't it right after, like, NYX and all that stuff?
Runaways was the product of Marvel trying and failing to launch a line of comics aimed at teens,
right,
called Tsunami, and in that line was also
I think it was Tsunami.
Your mommy. Also a part of that line was the Human Torch book by Scotty Young, which I remember not enjoying.
Yeah.
I think there was a Mystique book that was part of it that was also written by Brian K. Vaughan.
Emma Frost as well.
Yeah. The whole Tsunami branding quickly went away.
Yeah.
But Runaways was obviously the most successful from that whole experiment.
It was great. I doubt. And those characters just kind of vanished for the most part, aside from what's her name with the tutu and the.
Nico, she's in A-Force.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they bring back the Runaways every once in a while.
Do they? Oh, yeah. What's her head was a future X-Man.
Molly.
The tough girl.
Princess Powerful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Runaways. It was great.
Runaways is a good book.
Good answer. Good to hear from you, Chris. Miss you, buddy. Hope you're well. Now we get to Randy Andrews. I feel like we've been talking about him all day.
It's true.
His hint is, it's not Danger Girl. L-O-L.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week you asked, what is our favorite comic book cult hit? Well, guys, when I think of cult, I think of things like Conan, or The Phantom, or even The Shadow. My favorite would be
Star Trek
Rocketeer.
Music in the background? Star Trek?
The Rocketeer comics fuel the imagination even with the current series, Rocketeer at War. I really loved the tongue-in-cheek humor, the romance between Cliff and Betty, and the steampunk adventure when he takes on the bad guys. He's an aviator Indiana Jones, plain and simple. Well, that's it this week, guys. Hope you liked it. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net. And my music this week is from The Rocketeer.
Okay.
Rendezvous at Griffith Observatory.
Come on, James. You couldn't have seen that coming.
See you next week. Bye for now.
Randy is heavy into The Rock Eater. That is so cool.
Yeah, Rocketeer is great.
I love The Rocketeer. I do. Hey, man.
I think that's a good answer.
Yeah. Dave Brown.
Dave Stevens.
Dave Stevens, just like I said.
Yes. R.I.P.
Oh, that's right. He's a dead man.
Yeah, he had
that was a sad story.
Leukemia.
Yes, that was a very sad story. We lost him too soon.
Yep.
Okay. I'm glad you're not wishing death on him like some other people that you do on this show.
Rocketeer is a character that I always like. He did his job too well. Like, I didn't realize until much later that the Rocketeer was invented in the 80s. I thought he was really an old character.
I did too. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought like this was a real golden age character. Nope. Dave Stevens is just that good.
Just that good.
Yeah. That's a great cult comic suggestion, Randy.
Good job, Randy.
I love that answer. Let's go to Ketnerd.
Hey, Joe and Matt. Ketnerd here. So I was actually reminded of my pick a couple weeks ago during your discussion about overrated comics. I think it was Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn, who called out Grant Morrison's Arkham Asylum, which led you guys to mention one of my favorite comics of all time, The Invisibles. And yeah, while I totally get that a book about a cell of Rosicrucian magic-wielding anarchists
wait, what was that word?
For everybody, it was tailor made for circa 1996 Kettner. If someone asked me to boil down the whole of 1990s culture into one comic book, I would just hand them The Invisibles, where we have conspiracies up the wazoo, scary secret orders, men in black, fifth dimensional UFOs, voodoo, kung fu, punks and club kids living together, mass hysteria. And we had a crew of characters way more uncanny than any X-Men lineup. There was a transsexual shaman, an ex-cop, and a time traveler from the Church of the Gnostic Straight Edge. Not up my alley at all. Not to mention Grant Morrison piloting another imaginary world using my favorite of his self-proclaimed fiction suits, the latex bondage gear-clad King Mob.
Yeah.
The cult status of the book was bolstered by the fact that it had one of the best letter columns of its day, with crazy discussions ranging from ritual magic, Grant Morrison's health, and the book's status as it constantly teetered on the brink of cancellation. This comic also inspired some truly cultish fan behavior on my part, which included attempting real ritual magic.
Whoa.
Yeah. Also, one time I made Grant Morrison a batch of vegan cookies made to look like Invisibles badges. So yeah,
okay.
Invisibles is the best cult comic because it inspired true deviant weirdness. I think Grant would be proud. Well, that's my answer, guys. If you want to hear more from me, please check out my podcast, Galacticus, on iTunes, and check out my comics and illustrations at ketnerd.com.
Jim Ketnerd opens up, shares some secrets.
Real truths.
I appreciate that, Jim. That's very brave.
He in his email, which he always sends along a very lovely email explaining his answer. He, in reference to his answer from last week, he said, I was glad I got to actually throw Warzone into the mix. Although Hopi and Maggie were probably more into Dr. No and the Circle Jerks.
Yeah, definitely.
I repeatedly passed up seeing them live.
The Residents. They love the Residents.
I repeatedly passed up seeing them live, thinking there would always be another chance, but did go to several of the Ray B's memorial / funeral fundraiser shows at CB's.
Cool.
I got to see Gorilla Biscuits and Sick of It All. And I met Booger from Revenge of the Nerds after the show.
No way!
A truly strange night. I always love Kettner's calls.
Yeah.
He's so good.
They're good. And he's into old school punk rock and hardcore.
Yeah.
Love that kid. Ketnerd, man. Great answer. I love the Invisibles. I can't defend it.
I hate the Invisibles.
It is borderline.
I couldn't
pure nonsense.
I couldn't make it through the first trade.
I love it. It is a look into Grant Morrison's coke-addled brain. Purely and simply. That's all it is. Let's go to Snowy Maine.
Okay. I thought I knew my answer to this one right away, so I dug the issues out and reread them. Doom 2099, issues 24 through 37 or whatever, which was Warren Ellis's run. Here's the thing, though. It doesn't hold up. But the reread did lead me to my answer. Mr. Ellis's best work, but for some reason it doesn't get the love that Transmet or Planetary get.
Say the Druid.
I'm talking about Global Frequency. Global Frequency is the most forward-thinking comic of our time and covers what was in 2003 science fiction, or at least socially prophetic. The memetic virus in issue 3 came true. It's just called Facebook now. In the 12 issues, he covers dirty bombs, biological warfare, population control, torture techniques, and the morality of it. Sad to say, even hostage situations and mass shootings. This is heavy stuff, which is why I'm not cracking any jokes this week. This series is now more than 10 years old. Old enough that in one issue, featuring a pair of lesbians, the editors wouldn't even let him show them kissing. As f***ed up as that is, it shows Mr. Ellis's brilliance in pulling back the curtain on us as people, and how silly focus on things like who's kissing who were distracting us from the moral decay and the real conflicts in our new global society would eventually lead us to the mess we're dealing with now. Wow, that got a little heavy. But Global Frequency is the best example of how comic books can uniquely help us deal with this tragic subject matter. Let's end with something positive. As much as this series was perhaps the creator putting his high beams on issues we'd all be facing in the near future, the action and pacing were fantastic, and the rich character development for a book whose cast would almost completely change in every book proves Ellis is one of the best. Issue 6, with a parkour chick, is possibly the best single comic book I've ever read.
So good.
Kiss, kiss, nerds. Now go read it.
The Orca laying it down. Wow. That was serious.
Uncomfortably restrained.
Yes. And heart-wrenching and true. Global Frequency, awesome.
Yeah, they were going to make a Global Frequency TV show.
I am so glad they didn't.
No way, dude.
No way.
They cast Michelle Forbes as Miranda Zero. For those of you who don't know that name, Michelle Forbes was in the most recent Hunger Games movie. She is also most famous for playing Ensign Ro in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh.
And she was perfect to play Miranda Zero, and that pilot is amazing.
The pilot was good. I'm just afraid they're going to screw it up. You know?
Oh, it was so true to the comic.
Yeah, the pilot was really good. You can still see it on YouTube. It's up there.
Worth a watch. I wish. But yeah, the Orca is right. That show was just like prescient in the way it...
That comic.
Yeah, that comic it was just prescient in the issues it dealt with and where we're at today.
It was so cool.
Holy smokes.
It was so cool. I think was it the first issue? It was about the hole in the ground that everybody said that they heard angels speaking through. and it messed with everyone's head. And it turned out it was
the first issue.
It was just the wind blowing through it at a certain rate that created this really crazy sound that scrambled everybody's brain.
I don't remember if it was the first issue or not, but yeah,
it was so cool. It was like the X-Files on crack.
Every issue was a standalone, separate story. I love that book.
The story about the two guys that are fighting over their ex-girlfriend. Or no, they're fighting over a book that their ex-girlfriend had that they left. And the book was like how to turn off your pain receptors and make adrenaline flow through your, like freely through your body. And they're just mutilating each other. Like the most vicious fight scene you have seen for 32 pages. Mm. And then it unveils what the book is that they're fighting over. So cool.
We actually reviewed the Global Frequency Complete Edition trade paperback on this show. Matt was gone. I believe I did that with guest host Keith Silva.
I think that's right.
If you go to twoheadednerd.com or if you Google twoheadednerd Global Frequency, it'll pop up. But it was years ago.
I'll plug it in the editor's notes. I'll find it. Plug it in. Awesome. Awesome answer from the Orca. Whew, that's going to be hard to beat. Tim Benson is up next. Tim doesn't always play by the rules.
He's a maverick.
He is. He's hard to control, you know?
Yeah. Loose cannon.
He's a loose cannon. That's exactly what I was going to say. All right, Tim. I see what you titled your MP3. You're going to have to win me over here, man.
Oh, I'm already ready to give it to him.
Hey, Twitter nerd. So here's my case for why Daredevil's the cult classic, right? So before the internet, you know, and you were kind of on your, I can't fake it. Sorry. Okay. So sorry I haven't called for a few weeks. You know, it takes a lot longer to get to Maine than I thought. But after I got through all the one-way streets, I finally got here. I asked the first lady I found just walking down the street. I was like, hey, where's Dorca's house? And she, you know, she jumped in the car and she took me there. So now I'm here, but I thought I'd call before I go to work. And so I've got an answer. So Doctor Strange, back in like 2000 or so, miniseries called Flight of Bones. Nobody liked it. I still don't think anyone likes it, so it's not really a cult classic. Oh, but I still, that's my answer, I guess. I love it. It's the 4 issues, quick. I like the story. I like the art. It's definitive Doctor Strange for me because it was the first time I ever read a Doctor Strange story. The covers and some of the images are being used for the movie promos a lot right now, but still nobody's reading the book. So maybe that works. But I'm here. I'm at Dorca's house. I got some work to do. Be out of breath soon. See you guys.
Good luck, buddy. That's all I have to say.
Tim, I think the real reason that miniseries is not very highly regarded is not because it's bad necessarily. It's because the whole thing was supposed to be drawn by Tony Harris.
Yes.
Who flaked out after like the second issue.
He did all the covers.
Yeah. Well, that's because those things were drawn months in advance, I'm sure.
He did all the covers. Travis Jolly wrote it.
Not Travis Jolly.
Is it not? Is it Dan Jolly?
It's Dan Jolly. Dan Jolly
wrote it.
Dan Jolly, who I love.
I can't remember who ended up
drawing. Paul Chadwick, creator of Concrete.
Was it Chadwick?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He took over after like the second issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give it cult status.
Yeah. Doctor Strange totally gets cult status because that dude cannot sustain his own book.
No.
He has not been able to sustain his own book for years.
My favorite Doctor Strange cult story, Warren Ellis. Very early Warren Ellis on the end of, it was like Doctor Strange Volume 2, I think.
Is it where he turned himself into a sexy dude?
Yes. First he was wearing like the weird black like unitard that covered his entire body. And you didn't know it was Doctor Strange at the time because he was using different magic and stuff. Oh, it was so cool. It was so cool. Loved it.
All right.
Absolutely loved it. Good answer, Tim. You played by the rules.
It counts. Yeah. Tim, you did it.
Whew.
I don't want to alarm anybody,
yeah,
but it's getting late.
Really? What time is it?
I think it's Tuesday time.
Is it Tuesday time already?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Another week has come and gone. That means it's a tantalizing time for the toots time. Oh, delightful.
Disturbing.
Cool. Creepy.
Well, I guess the only answer I can give has to be the book that I still read to this day. First published in 1978, although I didn't discover it until the 80s, early 80s. Probably 82. 83, maybe. I'm not sure, but...
Riveting.
This is the longest-running, independently published fantasy series of all time.
ElfQuest.
It is Epic Quest of Cutter, Chief of the Wolf Riders, and his quest to find others of their own kind on the world of Two Moons. That's right, you got it. I am talking about ElfQuest. Ugh. I've been reading that comic book forever. I really enjoy it. And I didn't really know a lot of people reading it when I was growing up. Well, I did when I first discovered it in the 80s, but then when I kept reading comics and my friends did not, I was the only one reading it. So I felt like I was a cult of one. Even though there is a large following for this book, it's not a very popular book amongst superhero types. If you want a real treat, go look up Wendy Pini doing a stage play with writer-artist Frank Thorne.
Oh, God,
in
no.
the 1970s.
No, thank
she
you.
Dressed as Red Sonja. He was a wizard. They had this thing that they did. She was a knockout. She's probably the one of the best Red Sonja cosplays I've ever seen. And, hey, Frank Thorne did not create that bikini. It was Esteban Maroto. He's the artist that did it. Wasn't a bunch of dudes sitting around thinking, what's going to give dude boners? Okay, guys.
Esteban Maroto is still a dude.
ElfQuest.
You know what? ElfQuest is definitely a cult
it's
hit.
It's a huge cult.
Because.
Yeah, cult hit, definitely.
I know this is very judgmental of me, but I cannot get behind ElfQuest.
I can't do it either.
Get into it.
I can't do it either.
And
I've never cared.
I know that the bias, it's my own bias.
Yes.
It's my own fault. I'm fully copping to it.
I'm not blaming ElfQuest. ElfQuest is ElfQuest and people love it. And the Peenies have done an amazing job keeping that alive and keeping their fan base happy.
Yeah.
It does nothing for me.
I'm going to tell you, this might speak a little bit to my terrible psychoses, but there's something about the way it's drawn.
Yes.
That I find very uncomfortable.
They're like cherubic elf babies.
It's like, hey, let's take these little kids and give them way too adult characteristics.
Yeah.
And I am not into that. And I know they're not children. I know they aren't children. But that's just what my brain sees that and goes, oof, no. The fault is mine. I get it.
Yeah.
I just am not into it. But that's what makes it a cult hit. A smallish but vocal, passionate following.
Cultists.
I will say the best thing ElfQuest ever did for me. Somehow I had a copy of ElfQuest that had been given to me by somebody.
Okay.
And I traded it on the school bus for a copy of Crisis on Infinite Earths number 7, thus changing the course of my life for all time.
I traded 2 copies of ElfQuest on the school bus for a joint and a nudie mag, thereby changing my life for all time.
I think I got a better deal.
I don't know, dude. It was a good nudie mag. Thank you for your call, Mr. Toots, and your fierce defense of ElfQuest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very nice. Let's go to Harvey Locust.
Hey, nerds. Locust here. And let me start off by apologizing for last week. I totally misunderstood the question and put what I think is my correct answer up on the forum. So if you want to go check that out, go ahead and pause and do that now. All right, you're back. Thanks. anyway, this week's answer, I'm going with The Intimates, 2005 Joe Kelly 12-issue limited series, which I don't think was intended to be a limited series.
I don't think so either.
Nope.
Joe Casey himself has said that he wanted the series to be somewhat like a really good sitcom where if you do read it in continuity or like you would a sitcom, watch it in chronological order, then yeah, you could get something more out of it. But also you could just go back at any point and just pick it up and read a random issue or, you know, as you would watch a random Seinfeld episode and still be able to enjoy it without having to sit down through the whole mythology of a show. That being said, this also featured a pop-up kind of style of information style that it was known for, which kind of, I think, maybe offset some readers. I don't know. It was critically acclaimed, but didn't sell well, and that's why I think it actually just got crammed into a 12-issue limited. And also, like I said, what Joe Casey was saying about him wanting to write like that, like a good sitcom, but in order to put make every single issue be a single story is a lot harder to write by yourself than one might think.
Right on.
That's why, you know, big shows have big writing staffs. So that's my answer. The Intimates, check it out if you haven't read it later.
Lovely answer.
I loved that book.
I did too.
Yeah,
I love Joe
great.
Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Love Joe Casey.
That was a great time for Wildstorm, because that was right around the time that Wildcats 3.0, 2.0, and 3.0 were going.
Almost my answer.
Oh, those yeah. books are so good.
Holy hell, those were good.
Yeah, and Joe Casey, well, that was right, the Wildstorm, kind of where, like, Wildstorm was a place for real, excellent, creator-driven,
yeah.
compelling books.
Yeah. Joe Casey and Eric Canetti on Mr. Majestic.
Yeah.
Man, that series was great.
Brubaker and Phillips' Sleeper was around right around that time.
So good.
Yeah, man. Wildstorm,
like, stories
was
that you couldn't tell at Marvel or DC at that yeah. time. They were fantastic stuff.
Ooh. And then they rebooted and all their books were garbage.
Yeah. And now they've been co-opted into the
and now
DCU,
they don't exist.
And some little parts are around and others are not at all.
No, they don't exist. It's yeah. like they don't exist.
I think the Midnighter is really the only thing that's around. Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Stormwatch is canceled. They're like,
but I mean, they still exist technically in the framework of the DC universe.
Fair enough.
But yeah, great answer, Harv. I love it.
Let's go to Scotty Brown, Jim Kettnerd's podcast partner on the Galacticus podcast.
I listened to the show. It's pretty fun.
It's fun. It's fun. I like it.
Greetings, gentle nerds. This is Scott from the Galacticus podcast about the question of the week for a favorite cult comic. I had to go with Matt Wagner's Grendel after Ooh. Much deliberation. I do like a lot of cult comics. Whether it be the story of the crime boss and assassin prodigy Hunter Rose or the futuristic cyborg paladin bodyguard Grendel Prime, Matt Wagner's Grendel property has been so uniquely weird and cool and been part of my life for so long that I even got my first tattoo was of the Grendel symbol, the Grendel eyes, on my shoulder.
Nerd.
This property has always been rumored to be optioned, and you've always heard about potential movies and maybe some kind of, you know, HBO property or something like that. But it's never really gone the way of The Mask or The Crow or other 80s and 90s violent properties that were turned into
yeah, no
quasi-successful movies or TV shows and whatnot. But the real reason I know it's a cult hit is that whenever I show my tattoo to even other fellow nerds, I will get the response, is that a Spawn tattoo? So, I hope you like my choice. I hope to hear from you soon, and I'll be listening in. Thanks.
I am so glad you don't have a Spawn tattoo. Oh my God, I'm glad. That's a fantastic answer. I love Grendel so much. I was so excited when Dark Horse put out those Grendel omnibus. I'm like, I'm going to read all the Grendel stuff I've never read. I'm just going to sit down and do it. But they compress them so small.
Yeah.
And Grendel is a very wordy comic. And Hunter Rose, the character himself, speaks like a poet. He's a lunatic. And when you smash those huge blocks of dialogue into little tiny word balloons, it will give you a migraine trying to read that shit. Let me tell you.
I have never read Grendel.
Grendel is so cool. You didn't read like Grendel versus Batman and stuff?
No, I have them. I bought them and I just never got around to it.
Rad. That's what that was actually my introduction to Grendel, was Grendel versus Batman. And then I was like, what is this? And I had to go check out all the other stuff.
Beautiful looking books.
I just love Matt Wagner.
I did too.
And now I want to change my answer. I'm not going to, but man, I loved Matt Wagner's Mage so much.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that book was fantastic.
Kevin Matchstick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. King Arthur with a baseball bat.
We're never going to get the conclusion of the trilogy.
Nope. We'll never find out what happened to Kevin Matchstick. Thanks for the call, Scott. Good to hear from you, buddy. Final call. Mr. Cleon Source.
We did it.
Himself, the Thunder from Down Under. Love this guy.
He was maybe a little bit late with his answer, but we're going to allow it because time goes backwards in Australia.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
like toilet water.
Yeah. I mean, like, who knows what day it is there?
Yeah.
I can't figure it out.
G'day Twitter nerd, might be like an hour or so out of the time limit for the question of the week.
There's
but
no
I thought
way to
I'll
know.
Send one anyway. Don't know if I'm going to come on the show, but whatever, I thought I'll send one just so you don't think I'm, you know, murdered by a koala or, you know, strangled by eucalyptus or some So, my favorite comic book cult hit.
Eaten by wallabies.
Drug off by dink.
Gosh, it's a tricky one. Because I kind of find it hard sometimes to think of, you know, what was, you know, a cult hit, what was something that was, you know, small and independent, but still critically acclaimed. I guess the best thing that I can think of right now, would be Superior Foes of Spider-Man. I thought that was a really, really, great comic book series, really, you know, unique unto itself. I know a lot of people, you know, were saying how it was inspired from, you know, that Fraction and Aja's Hawkeye. And, you know, I saw grains of that in the book, but I still think it had its own unique voice. And I know that, you know, it had quite a good following that wasn't too big, but we were all dedicated and we all enjoyed the book quite a lot. And I think it hopefully has given Marvel the balls to try and do more books like that. I think with this whole all new, all different thing, there are books coming out, you know, things like that Vision book and, you know, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, all these really sort of niche, weird but fun kind of Marvel books. So, yeah, I'd kind of off topic there. But, yeah, Superior Foes of Spider-Man, guys. Hope you guys are doing well. Take care. And if I don't send one in before Christmas, Merry Christmas, y'all.
Cleon. Good to hear from you, sir.
Yeah, buddy.
I didn't know they had y'all in Australia. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Superior Foes of Spider-Man was wonderful.
Yes, that's a great book. I really was. Love it. It's a miracle that it survived as long as it did.
Was that also Casey?
No, that was Nick Spencer with art by Steve Lieber.
Okay, there you go. Good call. Nick Spencer. Yeah, that was a fantastic
book. Yeah, so funny.
So good. And like, not just funny, but there was like emotional heft to it too.
Yeah.
Like you learned some stuff about some of these B-list Spidey villains that,
I mean, it's got the Shocker in it and the Shocker is my favorite Spider-Man villain.
I do love the Shocker.
So I was on board.
Cleon, lovely to hear from you. We gotta get to our favorite call.
We gotta choose a favorite.
Favorite call.
Hold up. I gotta call up the list.
I've got mine.
There was a lot of contenders for me this week. Like they did a great job.
They all did a very good job.
AOTW, there we go. Man.
The Orca tugged at my heartstrings very much the Global Frequency. But I have to go with Cat Nerd and the Invisibles.
Okay.
I think Invisibles is the ultimate example of a cult comic book that you either got it or didn't care that you couldn't get it. or you hated it. You know? I love the Invisibles. I bought the big, sexy hardcover version of the complete Invisibles, and it is wackadoo, man. I would tell you not to read it unless your perceptions are shifted by some chemicals. It is hard to follow.
You know what? I think I'm giving mine to Randy.
Yeah?
For the Rocketeer.
Okay. I think a Rocketeer is a wonderful answer.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
And I agree. You know, the Rocketeer is just this character that, like, yeah, people see the Rocketeer and they're like, oh yeah, that movie was pretty good.
It was good.
But you know,
wasn't that Modine? Matthew Modine was your Rocketeer?
No.
Who was it?
It was Billy Campbell or whatever his name is. Billy.
Who?
Bill Campbell?
Who?
The guy from Friday Night Lights. No. It wasn't the guy from Friday Night Lights.
No. 1991. Billy Campbell.
Yeah, I know what I'm talking about.
Okay. It was Billy Campbell. There you go.
But Billy Campbell is not the guy from Friday Night Lights.
Connolly was in there. Arkin was in there. Dalton was there. Sorvino. This movie was loaded. Holy crap. Terry O'Quinn. Ed Lauder. James Handy. Don Pugsley. Don Pugsley never made a bad film. The Rock Eater. I like it. It's a good answer.
Yeah, I just think it's a way underrated comic book movie.
Yeah.
And comic book, like,
and comic book, yeah.
Not, it doesn't get a ton of attention, but it's just so good.
Rocketeer is great. And even the most recent, like that IDW Rocketeer stuff they were doing was fantastic.
Yeah.
Mark Waid did some of it. It was,
yeah, they did
lovely.
Mark Waid versus the Spirit. Rocketeer meets the Spirit by Mark Waid.
That was fun.
Yeah.
It was
I loved it. Good job, guys.
Let's get to us.
All right.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, I have, go ahead.
I have no choice.
Yeah, fine.
We all know what I have to pick.
Tell me.
Call it. You tell me. What is it? What's Matt Bomb's favorite cult comic?
Is it the Wildcats?
No. Come on.
What?
Come on, man.
What?
Seriously. You don't know?
No.
Larry Stroman.
Oh, Alien Chuck Legion. Dixon,
Alien Legion. There's no other choice for me.
There are a lot of options when it comes to
There's
you.
A lot of options.
It could have been a lot of different things.
Alien Legion is not only like one of my favorite cult comic books, it's one of my favorite comic books, period.
Sure, yeah.
It was just a comic, like, I never really got into war comics, and Alien Legion is very much a war comic.
Full show.
It's an ensemble book about these aliens that are off in different theaters fighting all kinds of different wars. I never really understood what was going on, but it was so great, and it was this, like, crazy character piece about all these different aliens dropped into the you know, like, bonding in a time of war. I love Alien Legion so much.
You want me to blow your mind real quick?
I want a big, complete Alien Legion. That's what I want.
Yeah.
And I will be one of maybe two people in the world that buys it.
You're ready for me to blow your mind real fast?
Blow my mind.
Aaron Myers texted me this morning.
Mm-hmm.
He was at somewhere, a swap meet or a comic show. Dude goes to a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
He goes into like people's backyards and rummages through comics. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, he's got a comic detector. He walks down the parkway.
He's that comic book geocaching.
Dig stuff up. And yeah.
So he texted me. He's like, I was at this swap meet. And some dude was selling these original art pages for $7 each. And one of them was an Alien Legion page.
Is it Stroman?
I don't think it was.
Just show it to me. Quit screwing around.
They belonged to the inker. They're all signed by the inker, Randy Emberland.
God. Oh, wow. That is cool. This is the first Alien Legion. Yeah, this is before Stroman took it over.
It's Alien Legion number 12, Hollow Harvest.
Wow.
The artist of that book is Larry Stroman. It says Larry Stroman.
Is it Stroman? It is. This is Stroman. Yeah, early Stroman. The only thing that upsets me is it doesn't feature any of the characters.
Well,
like,
that might be why it was $7.
Still very cool. That is so cool.
One of the other pages he's got here is from Web of Spider-Man annual. It's the Atlantis Attacks annual.
Oh.
And so at first I thought it was a young Mark Bagley.
Who would that have been?
It's Javier Salteres.
Oh, I remember him.
Mark Bagley drew all the backups for Atlantis Attacks.
Okay.
Javier Salteres is better known perhaps as one of the artists that drew the return of Ghost Rider, the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah. Salteres was good and disappeared.
No, he's done some stuff.
Has he?
None of it very good.
Oh.
But.
Okay. Well, thank you for your work, Javier.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, none of this is germane to the conversation. I just thought it was cool. Aaron got himself an original Larry Stroman Alien Legion page for $7.
Kill for that. I'll give you 10 for it, Aaron. That's a $3 profit.
Boom.
Come on, man.
Will you also pay for shipping?
Sure.
All right. There you go.
There you go. I mean, it's a done deal, right? That's that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, not even the stock market gives
you
30%
profit.
Nice working
with you, Patrick. That was easy. What's your answer? Favorite cold comic book?
Okay. So I struggled with this a little because I didn't have an answer, but because I didn't want to say the same answer I always give. It's like, everyone knows Joe Patrick loves Starman.
Right.
Everyone knows Joe Patrick loves Hitman.
Sure.
I thought I'd talk about Our Man.
You're going to say Boris the Bear.
I'm not. I thought I'd talk about Our Man, the Tom Payer, Rags Morales Our Man series, but I think I've even talked about that before on the show.
Reed Fleming, World's Toughest Milkman.
Yes. No.
Flaming Carrot.
But Kettner mentioned something in his email that reminded me. It's like, oh my God, yes, I did love that series. That series was my favorites. And I thought I was one of the only people that ever read it.
Steel Grip Starkey and the All-Purpose Power Tool.
And that series was a DC comic called Young Heroes in Love.
Oh my God. I remember this book. It was great.
Young Heroes in Love came out in 1997. It only ran for about 18 issues.
It was a great book.
And it was created by Dan Raspler and Dev Madden, who were, I don't remember who's who. Dan Raspler, I remember at the time being an editor at DC. So Dev Madden must have been the artist. And the idea was that this was sort of a Craigslist superhero team, or like a garage band superhero team, where it's like you put up a flyer and you're like, superheroes wanted. Tear off my phone number and call me later.
Right.
And so it was this loose affiliation of Z-list characters with names like Off-Ramp, who drove a hot rod and teleported. Monster Girl, Bonfire, Thunderhead, Frostbite. The leader was named Hard Drive for reasons I could not tell you because he had telekinetic powers.
Okay.
Not computer powers.
All right.
There was Zip Kid, who had the ability to, it was basically the Wasp. She could shrink and then fly.
Okay.
And then there was Junior, who did not have any abilities. He just happened to be 3 inches tall. He was the smartest guy on the team. And
he was 3 inches tall.
Yeah, he like an experiment just like shrank him down to tiny size.
All right.
But he did not have any powers. He could not return to normal size. He was 6 inches tall, excuse me, due to a laboratory accident.
Okay, that's twice as big as you said.
Yeah, and he was in love with Zip Kid because Zip Kid could be at his level. But of course, she grew up. She was able to become a normal sized person, and she had a boyfriend and the whole deal. Lots of drama.
That's rough for Junior.
I know.
Jeez.
So Young Heroes in Love was less about these heroes fighting crime and getting in adventures and more about the drama inherent in their gathering.
Right.
And somebody's going to betray the team, and Hard Drive, the leader, is actually psychically manipulating the team.
Whoa.
Into like doing things they don't want to do.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it featured a lot of things that at the time were pretty taboo in the 90s. One of the characters was bisexual, and they addressed that in the book. And then the whole idea that Hard Drive was trying to mind control people into like hooking up because it was better for their Q rating.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's a wonderful series. Wonderful.
Probably not in print.
Oh no. No, I don't think so.
I doubt it.
I don't think they even put it in trade. It.
Yeah. Wow.
But it's so good.
That's fun.
Young Heroes in Love.
It's a fun pick.
And I got to give props to Kettner for reminding me of it because
okay,
it's a really great book.
I remember back in the day too. I really liked it.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Canceled before its time.
Yeah. Well, so many of them are.
Yeah.
Fun question. Cult Comics. Speaking of fun questions, thank you for everybody that called in to answer this one, but we've got a new one. It's a little confusing. Joe Patrick.
It's not that confusing.
Why don't you go ahead and lay it down for us, Joe?
All right. So just imagine this. You've got a book like, Superman, It's a Bird by Steven Siegel, where it's really about Steven Siegel, not about Superman.
Right.
You've got the upcoming Batman graphic novel from Paul Dini, where it's more about Paul Dini working through his issues than it is about Batman.
Sure.
So the question is...
You've got Airboy. Did I just take your answer?
You edit that out.
Okay.
So the question is, what's your favorite usage of an iconic character outside of their normal context? So, Airboy would be a great example.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect one.
Okay. All right.
If you are confused by the topic, hit me up on the forums and we'll explain it.
Yeah, I mean, test your answer on the forums and we'll be like, I wouldn't call him with that. That doesn't really... I mean, we'll have Joe do it because I still don't know what he's talking
about. Yes, you do. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm a dummy. I'm the face of this show. Come on. I'm all eyes and hair.
And you know what? You don't
no brains.
You don't have to edit out Airboy because Airboy's not my answer.
Okay.
The most recent answer is Airboy, where the book is not about Airboy. Right. It's about James Robinson working through his issues.
And Airboy happens to be there.
Right. So it's an iconic character out of their normal context. It's not a Superman story where Superman punches people.
Right.
It's a story where somehow the existence of Superman affects the character and impacts the story without it being directly about that character.
Peter David tricks Superman into having sex with a transsexual hooker. Sorry, that was Airboy. My bad.
Yeah, okay. It's okay, it was just blowjobs.
Okay, yeah. And those don't count. We all know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, blowjobs are just, friends being friends. Thank you, everybody, that called in this week.
Wrap it up.
Yep. Golden Lasso of Truth is getting to both of us at this point. Again, we will have the recipe for the Golden Lasso for Truth in the notes if you would like to drink along with us while we answer your questions. We'll have another episode of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast popping up next weekend. It's going to be the Hanukkah drunk show. It's going to be messy. It's going to be ugly. After that, we are either going to Periscope or live tweet our holiday movie of the year this year. It is Lethal Weapon. It takes place in L.A. during Christmas.
I'm excited. Look it
up. It's going to be fun, although I am getting a little too old for this. Right now, our rogue Alec Baldwin AI is going to walk us out of here, tell you how to contact us, and probably doesn't have much else nice to say. But It's his job, goddammit. Of course, there will be another episode of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast this weekend. It's a very special Hanukkah drunk show episode. Get ready for that. After that, Joe Patrick and I are going to be live tweeting a holiday movie like we do every year. And we might even Periscope it. I haven't decided yet. Depends on how drunk we are. This year, if you want to watch along, go get your copy of Lethal Weapon Part 1 right now. But until next time, true believers, remember, nobody loves you more than us. Not your parents, not Jesus, not Santa, nobody. This is a Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
Hanukkah Drunk Show. Please, like these irresponsible slacker morons need an excuse to get drunk. Half the time the little one is so stoned he can't remember the incantation to open the damn cigarettes. The dog drinks too, and he's even more abusive than the drunk nerds. If you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Or leave a Skype message for the username twoheadednerd. Share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please.